Yo, welcome to another episode of the Basketball Card Podcast. I'm your host, Adam. You can reach me at TheReal27Guy on Instagram or just The27Guy on Twitter. I've been trying to do more stuff on Twitter. And so if you don't already follow me there, I've been doing some giveaways and things that I think that you might be interested in, and some content if you like Basketball Card Podcast that you will enjoy as well. So give me a follow on my Twitter, at the 27 guy. Today's episode, I'm going to call the most misunderstood law in the whole hobby. But first, today's episode is brought to us by PWCC. PWCC has a weekly auction ending every Sunday, and this Sunday we've got a couple of huge items that are up that I'm really excited for. The Tim Duncan Rubies rookie card from 97, that's the one with the Nebula pattern. Actually, the number 21 of 50 is up. That is a huge card. The LeBron Skybox LE rookie out of 99, and a Magic Johnson 03 limited logos with about as nice of a patch as you're ever going to see. All of them end this Sunday at PWCC. Guys, this episode today, I've been thinking about for a while, because there's this sort of constant assumption that I hear in my comings and goings and talking to people, that I feel like we need a reminder is just simply not true. And that is the idea that people collect based on how good the players are who they could be collecting. Meaning that there's an assumption that a better a player is, or the more value that they show on the court or on the field, the more collected that they will be. Now, you may be sitting there and saying, well, I know that that's not true, Adam. I'm sure of it. And if you are, then that's good. But there are a lot of people out there who I still continue to read and to listen to that I don't think it's right for us to mislead people into believing that if a player is good, that they will then inherently be collected, or if they play better, that they will be more collected. I've written down a few really interesting examples of this. So here's my first trivia question for you guys for the day. Do you know who the only player was in NBA history for the first, I don't even know how many years, 40, 50 years, 60 years, who led the league in both scoring and in assists in the same season? Now, Wilt Chamberlain led the league in scoring and in assists, but in two different seasons. Nate Archibald actually led the league in both. Nate Archibald had a prolific NBA career. He's a member of the NBA's greatest 50 and 75 teams. But he's not somebody who's collectible. And I think that's interesting because we always hear how bigs aren't collected. People will point to Duncan and Olajuwon and they'll say, hey, these guys are great, but they're not collected because they're bigs. So people always sort of put these rules around why certain guys are collected and why they aren't. In the second segment today, I want to talk about why people actually are collected, what really actually matters. But Nate Archibald, I think, is a good indication, or is a good example of somebody who you would think would be one of the all-time most collected players, but he's not. Look at a guy like James Harden, another guy who has led the league in both points and in assists, a guy who is one of the greatest scorers of all time, certainly has a game that's exciting and that's interesting, and that he can really go one-on-one. But is he super collected? He has a very passionate, high-end fan base, but I wouldn't describe him as being super collected. And then I think of a guy like Nikola Jokic. Nikola Jokic is, at this point, pretty clearly the player of the era. He is a guy who's going to win his third MVP this year. He's going to probably win his second championship, or at least he has a really good chance at it. I shouldn't say probably. That's not fair. He is one of the best players that any of us have ever gotten to see, but people will say he's a big and so he's not collected. But we just talked about James Harden, we talked about Nate Archibald, and we can go on and on through history and talk about why certain guys aren't collected, and we can talk about all those things. In the next section or segment, I want to talk about why guys are collected.
Do you grade your cards? Grading can preserve, protect, and beautify your cards. Well, maybe not all grading companies beautify the cards they grade, but CGC sure does. CGC slabs are so much nicer than the other big three that I send all of my PC cards to them for slabbing. Not only do they make the cards look amazing, but they are ultra durable. I used to think that a slab could only be super clear or super strong, but then CGC showed up. Check them out at cgccards.com today.
One of the questions that I've been asked a lot, or that I've had people at least pose to me in some form or another, is why isn't Tim Duncan more collected? And again, we can talk about how he's a big, and some people will just stop at that. But to me, that actually doesn't tell the whole story. Tim Duncan is collected by a lot of different collectors, but he's not as collected as much as a guy like Kobe. Oh, Kobe's somebody who I collect. And I would even say, I would even go as far as to say some of my favorite cards are Kobe Bryant collectors, or Kobe Bryant cards. I consider myself a Kobe Bryant collector. So how do I feel about the difference between Tim Duncan and Kobe Bryant on the court? So I'm just going to be really honest right now. I think Tim Duncan is probably one of the best 5 to 6 basketball players of all time, and I have Kobe outside that. That's not trying to dismiss anything that Kobe did, any of his accomplishments. He has, I think most people would agree, a top 10 career of all time. Some people would put him outside of that too. But the reason that I collect Kobe is the entire package. And part of that is related to the way that he played, but part of it is how important he was to the game and to our culture. And part of it is that he played in LA for all of those years, and thus he is part of the greatest fan base of NBA fans, and probably the biggest player from that group. That appeases my mind in terms of other people wanting to collect him. I'm now making this about Kobe. I don't mean to do that. Let's focus on Duncan for a second. Duncan, 5 championships with the same team all those years. We could talk about his awards and accomplishments on and on and on, but he's not as collected as other guys are around him. And I think it has most to do with where he played and the way that he carries himself. I think I would have liked to hang out with Tim Duncan or to go to dinner with him more than just about any NBA player. But as far as collecting him, that doesn't do it. The fact that he's good is only part of the story. Duncan is probably most closely connected to Nikola Jokic in today's game. Jokic gets done with the season. He's ready to go home. He doesn't want to talk to his fans necessarily or be on TV any longer. He wants to get home. He wants to spend time with his family. Again, something that I really respect. But that's not necessarily who we like to collect. I have one card of John Stockton and Karl Malone. John Stockton and Karl Malone set all sorts of NBA records. Literally, John Stockton will always own the assist title. He will always own the steal title. Karl Malone's 3rd all-time in scoring. Absolutely could have been number 1 all-time if he wanted to. The guy just woke up every year and decided to go put up 2,000 points and never missed games and was absolutely incredible. But people don't collect Karl Malone and John Stockton, nor do I. I only have one card left. I've got some stuff that's going to be going for sale here pretty quick to pay for a couple of big lots that I bought. I'm only going to have 1 Stockton and 1 Malone card left. I ask myself, am I comfortable with that? Like, those are my guys. Those are the guys that I want to collect, right? Because I love John Stockton and Karl Malone. Well, deciding who to collect is a lot more complicated than that. Because you can't just say, what do I want? In fact, this is why the idea of collecting what you like, although is the best idea and the best advice, must have some revision. You can't just say collect what you like and then end the sentence there. And I've talked about this in the past. You have to think with both your brain and your heart. And to me, your heart has to be, do I want to own this? Is this something that I want to have enter into my collection and be part of my sort of book of memories of the hobby or of the sport? Well, the answer to that might be yes, but if it doesn't make sense with your brain as well, then I don't know that it's the right decision, because most of us care whether we freely admit it or not, because we might fear, you know, people coming against us. Most of us care a great deal about what our cards are worth and what trajectory they have. Most of us want to see our cards increase in value or at least hold value. And so that's where being able to think with your head comes into play. And so this is what I'm talking about in this section. What matters? Tim Duncan, one of the greatest players of all time, surely that matters. But the fact that he doesn't have the social following of Kobe Bryant also matters. So how do you determine that? Because it's not even quantity of followers, right? Clearly, some of the players who used to play, who don't anymore, don't have that many followers. Whereas some guys who play today aren't even that popular and have a ton. So there's not an exact mathematical sort of calculation to get you there. I think today, everybody wants to put stuff in a graph. Everybody wants to say, here's what I can see from the graph. They want to put social media following and accolades and everything into a nice little picture that says, this is who I think this guy is. This is how good he is. This is how collectible he should be. Again, it's still just not quite right. There's something more. There's something more than following and on social media. And there's something more than how good the player was. And I don't even know exactly how to describe it, but knowing where the player played, who collects his cards, whether he has more accolades to get potentially, what is in the immediate future of that player or person, these are all sort of important things that as time goes by, you're able to analyze and say, okay, this is something that may influence this person. Let's look at a few more examples here in our next in our last and final section of today's show. My card post is changing the way the hobby does business. Ever sold a massive card and been hit with a huge final value fee? On My Card Post, you can buy, sell, or trade without any extra fees. How do they do it? Joining My Card Post as a buyer is absolutely free. Say goodbye to fees and start making deals on mycardpost.com today. I want to close today by looking at some items that have held in terms of insane pricing over the course of the last couple of years as most other stuff has fallen back to earth. So let's look at each of them and figure out what common traits they have and maybe talk about some of the players involved as well. So the first thing that I wrote down that I think is a really interesting use case for this conversation is super high grade vintage. And I'm thinking in particular about the 1969 and 1970 singles that we saw move about a year ago at PWCC. Those cards, if you don't remember, I did a whole episode on these. Those cards sold for such an extraordinary amount of money. We're talking about a huge number of PSA 10 cards of the tall boys. And most of them were Pop 1, Pop 2, Pop 3. And some of them sold for, I mean, we're talking about common cards that sold for close to six figures, and some of them into the six figures. Some cards of guys like Walt Frazier, who you know, and whose rookie card you know, sold for insane amounts of money, $250,000. Why did these cards sell so well or hold up so well during this mostly down down era of the hobby? That's the wrong way to say it. This era in which has brought a lot of decreases in value the last couple of years, what caused them to still sell for so much money? Well, I think one thing that you have to look at there is it's not about the player, right? I started this conversation about who and who ends up being super popular or collectible. And now I'm switching it to what is popular and collectible. It is actually clear to me that you can't just take the variable of who and say that's somebody who can't go up or can't go down in value. I think that's too simplistic. I think instead what you have to do is you have to look at it and say, what can increase and what can decrease in value? And frankly, everything can increase or decrease in value just depending on the market, meaning the people who come to the table or people who are willing to sell. Imagine for a second that the biggest owner of something in the hobby, whether it be exquisite basketball or 1986 Fleer or vintage baseball or any of these things, imagine if the single biggest owner came to market and sold everything at once. Would it have an impact on the values of those cards? Of course it would. If Nat went and sold his entire PMG green set all at once, would the market bear what we think that they would right now? No, they wouldn't. Because part of it is built in that Nat owns that set and that there are these other guys that are going after it, right? So super high grade vintage is really interesting because some of those cards, especially those cards from the late 60s and 70s, those people putting together those sets for the PSA registry haven't gone anywhere and they were willing to really bid against each other. Now, what's really interesting about that too is if you were to just get rid of the top couple of guys, would you have cards that would have fallen from six figures down to the low five figures? I think the answer to that is yes. Sometimes you just need one or two people who are really into something to create an incredible amount of value. This takes me to the next thing, which is autographed vintage, in particular, rare and iconic cards. This last week we saw a Mickey Mantle 51 Bowman, really in okay shape, but with a really phenomenal autograph, sell exceptionally well at REA. And we've seen other ultra high-end cards from this same sort of genre that have really done well over the last little while. Again, in spite of the rest of the market sort of decreasing, these have increased. Again, we're looking at the what. We're not looking at the who. The who can go back and forth. It can be volatile, excuse me. Whether it's Jokic or Jordan, right? Whether it's Penny Hardaway or Jason Williams. Those players, those last two who I mentioned, by the way, weren't even the greatest players, but they have maintained incredible amounts of value across their ultra high end. Why? Because there's this small base that loves their cards. And that is more loving of the what than it is of the who. Because we can also recognize big time Penny Hardaway and Jason Williams cards over the years that have decreased in value. Again, the cards that are more in high population. So the next example is ultra rare 90s stuff. We've seen a lot of the ultra rare 90s stuff perform pretty well over the last couple of years. Why? Because of a number of people who have determined that that's the stuff that they want to own in their collection. It checks the boxes for them. They're putting together sets. I just mentioned Nat a few minutes ago. There's the Nubani brothers, Nas, who is totally into some of these sets, and some of the other people who he knows and they're collecting those sets. Some people are they're not very happy about small groups of people coming in and really saying, I'm going to own this part of the hobby. But guess what? That's what happens in a situation like this. And there's nothing wrong with it. If somebody wants to come into a market and really make a splash, they can do it. They absolutely can. Because there only needs to be a few people who really are after it and really care about it. The last section that I thought about was important Logo Man autos. Some of these, and we're seeing one of them right now, the Michael Jordan Ultimate that's up, some of these have performed exceptionally well, while again, a lot of the other stuff hasn't. And to me, it comes down to, again, exclusivity. And so earlier I talked a little bit about who to look out for, and when I do that, I would highlight where they play, what their collector base is like, You know, the size of, not this is why where they play matters, the size of that collector base, how many times they moved around, because in general, people moving around is not good for them. It's not. LeBron's trying to prove that can be overcome, and he might do it. If there's anybody who can, it's him. But for most players, it's something that you can't overcome. Beyond the players, though, the stuff is what really matters. And the stuff is the type of card. That's the thing that I think you can control for far better than the player. The players will go up and go down, but the stuff is more sort of understandable. And it's based, again, on basic laws of supply and demand. This all takes me to my final point, which is this. We're always talking about collect what you like. But again, I think we need to think not just about collect what you like. We need to talk about, very honestly, about wanting to collect things that are going to increase in value or stay at the value that they're at. Things that you can own and love, but that you don't lose a ton of money on. It'd be nice if we could all just not worry about money. But the vast majority of us have to. I know I do. And I know that as I sort of have looked for the opportunities to make my collection what the best version of it is, that if I'm being really honest, I'm always thinking about what the potential gains and losses, the potential ups and downs are on those cards. And I think most of us are the same way. So with that said, collect what you like. Know what you like. I think I saw my friend Ephus Pitch mention that this week. Collect what you like, know what you like, and then also know what you think you feel reasonably confident will not only not lose value, but is a good deal. Think with both your brain and with your heart on every purchase that you make. That's my best advice for you. It's certainly not only what's helped me to build the collection that I have today, but it's what advice I would give to my son. Don't waste your time on stuff that you think might increase in value. Waste your time on the stuff that you love that you think may gain in value, right? If you love it and you think it may gain in value, then you know you have a winner. All right, guys, short episode this week. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Again, follow me at TheReal27Guy on my Instagram and at The27Guy on my Twitter. Go to bcfmag.com to check out the newest episode or newest issues of Basketball Card Fanatic magazine and to subscribe today. And until next time, happy collecting. Thanks for listening to the Basketball Card Podcast. Reminder to subscribe to Basketball Card Fanatic Magazine at bcfmag.com. Remember to use discount code BASKETBALL10 for 10% off any item in the store. That's bcfmag.com.